Support for this public radio podcast comes from Mellon Financial Corporation, helping financially successful individuals and families protect and maximize their assets through the practice of wealth management. Mellon.com. And by A.G. Edwards, caring for nest eggs for more than 120 years with a commitment to provide objective financial advice. Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, dedicated to a prudent approach to investing. Produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Nice try, but the Fed chairman's way too smart to put himself on the line like we might have hoped.
We have not calculated a probability of recession, and I wouldn't want to offer that today.
Ben Bernanke went to Congress, and we didn't even get a lousy T-shirt. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Duke University's Fuqua School of Business Executive MBA programs, where working professionals earn Duke MBAs from locations around the world. Online at DukeExecutiveMBA.com. And by A.G. Edwards, caring for nest eggs for more than 120 years, with a commitment to provide objective financial advice.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Thursday, today, the 8th of November. It's great to have you here. What we did get instead of that T-shirt was a peek at the short-term economic future. So here's what we'll do. We'll play some tape of the Fed chairman during his testimony before the Joint Economic Committee this morning, and then I'll help you read between the lines a little bit. Here's quote number one.
As these credit problems resolve, and as we hope the housing market begins to find a bottom, that the broader resiliency of the economy, which we are seeing in other areas outside of housing, will take control and will help the economy recover to a more reasonable growth pace.
Which is to say it's going to get worse before it gets better, but the Fed's guessing the economy will be back to normal by the middle of next year, if all those things Mr. Bernanke was talking about do happen. If they don't?
There are a number of factors at play right now, and including high oil prices, for example, that would be negatives for consumer spending. On the other hand, to the extent the labor market has remained reasonably strong and employment income has continued to grow, that is a positive to help sustain the consumer.
I don't know if you caught that, but it was the classic economist's line of on the one hand, on the other hand, so he's got his bases covered either way. When the Fed chief talked of slower growth ahead, some hedge fund managers were no doubt breathing a sigh of relief because they could actually make even more money if there's another interest rate cut sometime in the future. The Fed has lowered rates twice now to keep the economy from tanking. But at the same time, wealthy individuals and big institutions with money in hedge funds are enjoying decent returns, the best in almost 2 years, in fact. Gains last month averaged around 3.5%, in some cases as high as 10%. So who says things are tough all over? Here's Marketplace's Bob Moon.
At a time many Americans are losing their homes and the world's leading bankers are losing their shirts, how can others keep right on making a fortune? A scene from the movie Wall Street comes to mind.
We picked that rabbit out of the hat while everybody sits out there wondering how the hell we did it. I create nothing. I own.
Hedge fund managers have been cleaning up with lucrative wagers on the wild ups and downs of the stock market and even making winning bets on the direction of interest rates. Ironically, every rate cut makes it cheaper to make even more wagers and takes the sting out of any losing bets.
I call it the Fed insurance policy.
George Lukacs is managing director at Channel Capital Group. He says when the economy turns bad, the scavengers of the hedge fund world get busy.
The whole world, if you look at it, is really one big repo market. And so they're borrowing at a very cheap cost, and they're going to always know that they're going to have lower financing costs as disaster comes around.
He says that's because the Fed always comes to the rescue. At Tempest Consulting, senior trader Greg Salvaggio says that also helps explain what's been propping up the stock market.
As equity markets go up, fund managers need to continually put money in equity markets to match the historical return of the S&P 500. So it almost becomes this self-fulfilling prophecy on equity markets. Yes, the market thinks the Fed will cut rates again, so that will be good. But will it?
Salvaggio compares it to a Ponzi scheme, and he's not alone. The French president was on Capitol Hill yesterday warning lawmakers the U.S. needs to rein in what he labeled the abuses and excesses of speculation. In Los Angeles, I'm Bob Moon for Marketplace.
Oil traders took a breather today. Crude tumbled almost a buck to $95.46 a barrel, or by another measurement, about $700 a ton. Crude's not the only oil near record highs. Palm oil traded for about $900 a ton in Malaysia today. Prices for other vegetable oils are sizzling, too. And Marketplace's Jeff Tyler reports those hot commodities are cooking up some controversy.
About a third of the world's vegetable oil comes from palm trees. For the last decade, palm oil has traded for around $450 a ton. Now it sells for more than double.
What's behind it is a growing biodiesel industry, which is doing to vegetable oils what ethanol did to corn.
Len Steiner is an economic consultant to the food industry.
In the past, it was only for human consumption, and now it's for running motors.
In Hamburg, Germany, Thomas Milke agrees. He's director of Oil World, which studies international agriculture.
The new demand from the biodiesel industry has come so quickly that the production worldwide could not adapt quickly enough.
Milke says the same goes for corn, sunflower, and canola oils.
Record highs, all over the place, for the same reason, biofuels.
Eventually, consumers will pay the price and higher costs for margarine, salad dressing, and candy bars. Not such a big deal for U.S. consumers. But then again, Len Steiner says we Americans only spend about 7% of our income on food.
When you get into a place like Bangladesh that may be using 75% of their income for food, and all of a sudden you have something that goes up 35%, you got to decide who's going to eat in your family.
Even if new palm trees were planted today, it would take about 5 years before you could harvest the oil. I'm Jeff Tyler for Marketplace.
Sluggish retail sales, more subprimes, and a big hit to technology drove the markets down today and then back up a little bit. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. The East Coast and states along the Gulf of Mexico have their hurricanes. We've got wildfires and earthquakes out here. Not what you might call the most profitable places for insurance companies to set up shop, but the government's here to help. The House of Representatives wants to encourage states to set up an alternative to private property insurance. Marketplace's John Dimsdale reports now from Washington.
States say they've been forced to become the insurer of last resort for homeowners when insurance companies either raise rates or pull out after catastrophes. Under this bill, those states could pool their funds to share the risk. And following a major disaster, the bill allows the federal government to lend the state programs money. The bill's authors say around 35 states have government-sponsored property insurance programs eligible for the national pool. On the House floor, Florida Democrat Kathy Castor argued the bill is not just for her state.
Everyone is suffering these double-digit percentage increases in their property insurance bills. Look across the country to California. Florida is not alone, and the Gulf Coast is not alone.
But many in the insurance industry, especially reinsurers who backstop insurance companies, say the government is moving in on their business. Bob Hartwig is with the Insurance Information Institute.
The view of reinsurers is that what will happen if the federal government comes to play an important role in reinsuring catastrophic risk is the true cost of living in an area vulnerable to hurricanes or earthquakes or wildfires will not be reflected in the cost. And when that happens, you wind up with excessive development in areas that are prone to natural disasters.
New York Democratic Senator Hillary Clinton yesterday introduced a companion bill in the Senate. If the Senate approves it, the White House is threatening a veto, citing the bill's market-distorting potential. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
Tomorrow's a big day for European technophiles. The iPhone goes on sale in Germany and the UK. And in that spirit, we thought it might be illuminating to do a little smartphone tutorial for those who happen to be in the market. So we've brought back Kevin Pereira from G4 Television. Kevin, good to see you again.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Usually it's a one gizmo deal when you come to visit us, but I see one, two, three, four, five smartphones down there. One's the iPhone. We'll get to that later. But what have we?
We have a cell phone rodeo today. We're going to go down. There's two different types of phones on the table, although some of them look completely similar and others look, well, very dissimilar. If you're hip and with it, I've got two choices at different price points. And if you need a new smartphone to replace your aging Trio, I've got two other options, all brand new.
Let's talk about the smartphone market for just a second. I mean, what are people looking for in a smartphone these days?
Typically, they want a full QWERTY keyboard so that they can respond quickly to emails and texts.
Right.
They need to have enterprise email service. You know, the iPhone is not a smartphone because it doesn't have that. A lot of people discount it. They got to be able to connect to their work emails, to multiple accounts, and be able to multitask. Good calendar functions, great syncing. That is what makes a good smartphone.
Have these things become basically mass market devices? I mean, it used to be $500 or $600 a pop for, you know, the top of the line trio.
Right. And yes, the quick answer is yes, because all these devices here on the table, typically $200 or less. One device, which we'll get to, the Palm Centro, used to run you maybe $600. Now it's $100.
Let's talk about that Centro for just a second. It obviously is the heir to the Trio legacy here, right?
Yeah, but take a look at it. You tell me. Because
As we step away from the microphone,
yes,
it's a big no-no on the radio show.
I unbox this device.
Yeah, look at how small those keys are.
And that's the thing. It looks like a Fisher-Price My First Trio.
Yeah.
Right? Like it should come with a set of plastic keys and light up and, you know, you could hang it, dangle it above a baby and it'll put it to sleep. It just doesn't look like your typical smartphone. The screen is smaller and the buttons, most importantly, they almost look like candy-coated gumdrop buttons.
They do. I actually have to use my fingernails. I can't even use the whole pad
exactly
of my finger.
And that is the bane of this phone's existence.
All right, let me ask you something, though. I can get this Palm Centro, which is completely serviceable, although the keys are a little small. I can get it for $100.
Yes.
Plus whatever the service plan is going to cost me. I still have to pay, what is an iPhone now, $399 for an iPhone.
That's correct.
So weigh those factors for me. What might make me go one way or the other?
Can you afford it?
Yeah.
I mean, that's really the bottom line. If you can't, you'd simply go with this. I think the reason I brought this particular smartphone is that I think it's an entry-level smartphone, not just because of the price point, but because of the size and the features and the functionality. It's definitely designed for a youth market, and as such, if you don't want to spend $400 on your youth, you get a Miss Central.
Yeah, I actually don't want to spend $400 a piece on my three youth. Take me up a level to the next sort of level of smartphone
sure
that's out there.
Well, this is an interesting device. This one caught me by surprise. This is the T-Mobile HTC Shadow. And this device isn't out yet. It's coming out in a week or so.
I should say we'll have pictures of all these, by the way, on the website, marketplace.org. Anyway, coming out.
Yes. It immediately, what are your thoughts when you pick it up?
iPhone, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I thought it was
sleek
and stylish.
Thing, yeah.
It feels very solid, but slide it up. And most people don't expect that phone to slide out and have...
Oh,
not...
wait, listen to this.
Yeah.
Right? There
that's
you go.
The sound
that's cool.
Good design. But this guy right here, our last phone.
And another one, yes. What do we
this
got?
This is a Juke for Verizon Wireless. Almost a bite-sized candy bar style phone.
This is the swivelly thing.
This was your hip tween youth market. If you like Pop Rocks and Pet Rocks, there you go.
Yeah, so this is much more a phone.
Absolutely.
You know.
But that little tiny device that was in your hand is the only one with GPS built in that can actually give you turn-by-turn directions.
So really, they're a little bit conflicted, these manufacturers, as to what to try to cram into what particular form factor.
Right. What does the market want and how? And that's what they're still trying to figure out, obviously.
Kevin Pereira from G4 Television, attack of the show. Kevin, thanks a lot.
My pleasure.
These are fun, man. I love that. All right. We got to go. Coming up, basketball scout. That's got to be a cool gig.
Well, by name, it may sound like a glamorous job. In reality, it's a difficult job. It's a job that you will work your ass off like a houseboy.
Oh, but first, let's do the numbers. The Dow Industrials fell 0.25% today, 33 points to end at 13,266. The NASDAQ dropped 1.9%, 52 points, finished at 2696. The S&P 500 shaved off less than a point, closing basically flat at 1474. Cisco Systems plunged 9.5%. The network gear giant said it was feeling the pinch as banks trimmed spending in the wake of the credit crunch. A whole slew of other tech companies got slammed today as well. The shine came off Apple to the tune of nearly 6%. Research in Motion moved off 6.5%. Amazon.com pedaled downstream 4%. IBM had the blues down 4.5%. Hewlett-Packard lost 3.75%. And mighty, mighty Google fell 5.33%. You're listening to Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Vanguard, offering 529 plans for those thinking about saving for college at Vanguard.com/529. By Consumed, American Public Media special series exploring the sustainability of our consumer culture. Online at consumed.publicradio.org. and by U.S. Trust, Bank of America Private Wealth Management, committed to understanding the values that truly matter to clients and offering a personal approach to managing their wealth. Want more from Marketplace? It's all on our website. You can stream, download, or subscribe to podcasts of all our shows. And we have text of most stories, plus special reports and the Marketplace Toolbox. Check it out at marketplace.org.
For the Marketplace Datebook, here's a look at events coming up Friday, November 9th. The Commerce Department reports on America's trade deficit. U.S. and European officials meet in Washington to discuss global rules on toy safety. And Pakistani politician Benazir Bhutto hosts a rally to protest the emergency rule of President Pervez Musharraf. I'm Jennifer Collins.
This is Marketplace from American Public Media. I'm Kai Rizdahl. The Bush administration doesn't want any part of Democratic proposals to fix the alternative minimum tax. The White House said today the president would veto a proposal from House Ways and Means Committee Chairman Charlie Rangel. The House is set to vote tomorrow on Rangel's plan to raise taxes for private equity and hedge fund managers. That would offset the loss in government revenue that would accompany a temporary AMT patch. Commentator Jeff Birnbaum says the politics of fixing the AMT speaks volumes.
No one says so out loud, but Republicans are not as eager to fix the alternative minimum tax as Democrats are. A nice bit of irony, don't you think? The AMT was designed in 1969 to make sure that millionaires couldn't use loopholes to avoid paying income taxes altogether. But during a rewrite, the AMT was not indexed to inflation, which meant that middle-income people started to get hit by it as well. This year, unless Congress acts, 23 million middle- and upper-middle-income households will have to pay more taxes because of the AMT. The people who'd be hit hardest, it turns out, live in blue states. California, for instance, would have 1.7 million more AMT payers this year. New York would have a million more. New Jersey would have 750,000 more, and Massachusetts would have 500,000. Besides leaning Democratic, these states also have relatively high statewide taxes, which figures into the AMT calculation. But the fact remains, red states don't tend to have as many people looking at an AMT tax increase as blue states do. It's worth noting that anti-tax Republicans won't be rushing to vote for the so-called patch of the AMT in the House. In fact, they will largely vote against it, saying that the tax increases used to pay for the fix are harmful to the economy. I have no doubt that they believe what they say, but it's also true that they have less at stake than the Democrats in preventing the AMT from reaching the middle class. If Congress fails to act, there will be a lot more angry Democratic voters than Republican voters. The silver lining? The only way to finally get rid of the AMT will be a tax reform so sweeping that it will probably also have to solve the other major problems our government faces, from Social Security to health care. The AMT woes could end up forcing the government to finally get down to serious work.
Jeff Birnbaum is a columnist for The Washington Post. We'd love to hear what you think about the AMT or anything else you hear on the program. Go to our website. It's marketplace.org. Click on that link that says Contact. The NBA announced today the 2009 All-Star Game is going to be in Phoenix, Arizona. As long as they're thinking that far ahead, they might want to consider changing the name of the National Basketball Association to more accurately reflect reality. More than 20% of players in the league come from outside the United States. The reigning MVP, Dirk Nowitzki, of the Dallas Mavericks, is from Germany. China's Yao Ming is practically a household name, which makes them all mana from marketing heaven for a league with planetary ambitions. Of course, those players don't just show up on the NBA's doorstep wearing size 18 shoes. Working, our series on the life of a single worker in a global economy, returns today with a man responsible for finding tall strangers who can sink a fadeaway jumper. Here's John Miller in Nigeria.
Sam Amedu has come to Kano in northern Nigeria, near the edge of the Sahara Desert, for a regional high school basketball tournament. 3 days of tall, skinny teenagers slashing and hacking in a hot little arena. He sits at the scorer's table, taking notes.
Coming in here right now, I can tell you that two players interest me so far.
Amedu has an eye for talent, but it doesn't take an expert to notice the two best players on the floor.
Number four stands out because he's tall, he's big. He's rebounding well, he has been out rebounding anybody. He has been boxing out, and he has a very good gait and a very good structure.
Same goes for another kid on the same team who looks a lot like him. Turns out they're brothers, Moses and Paul, 6 feet, 6 inches tall. Everything's going fine until their team starts winning and an angry crowd gathers at the table.
They are saying number four has graduated from the school. So they will now write a protest. We'll look at their evidence. If it is true, then we would disqualify the team.
The team is disqualified. Seems the brothers aren't graduates, but ringers from another school entirely. Still, when the tournament's over, Amedu takes their names and numbers, says he'll be in touch. After all, it wasn't their fault that the coach let them play. Sam Amedu believes in basketball's redemptive power. He says the game saved him from becoming a rascal.
I feel God has been very, very kind to me by using basketball to shape my own life. I got an education, I'm a lawyer, all because of basketball.
For 40 years, Amedu's been playing or coaching or managing teams, but he always had a day job as a lawyer in the Nigerian army. Then in 2005, the NBA's Memphis Grizzlies offered him $10,000 a year to be their eyes and ears in Africa. Nike, always on the lookout for rising stars, kicked in another $7,500, so he went into basketball full time.
Whether they pay me or not, and they ask me to do those jobs, I will still do it anyway, because it's my passion.
But a scout's life ain't easy.
Ladies and gentlemen, before takeoff, we'd like to acquaint you with our airline safety regulations. Please watch the following demonstrations carefully.
Amedu spends about half his time on the road, not just in Nigeria, where he lives, but in Senegal, Congo, South Africa, Chad. A couple of weeks before I met him, he landed in the hospital, completely worn out.
Well, by name, it may sound like a glamorous job. In reality, it's a difficult job. It's a job that you will work your ass off like a houseboy.
Good pass, good job, good look.
It's not like it's hard to find tall people in Nigeria. There are seven-footers everywhere. But the country hasn't had an NBA star since Hakeem Olajuwon back in the 80s and 90s.
50% speed, slow down.
Back home in Lagos, Amedu drops by the national stadium to check out the junior national team, and I sit down with Abel Baraya, 19 years old. He's a good student. He says he wants to study IT in the States. I ask him if he sees basketball mainly as a way to let him do that.
No. I still want to make it to the NBA. That's the dream of every player. That's the crest of basketball. That's the peak of basketball.
Do you feel you have a good chance?
Of course. I would make it any day. I don't feel timid about myself, about my game. Lots of self-confidence, lots of self-esteem.
Lots of self-confidence, lots of self-esteem. That's the mantra here at the Warriors Basketball Academy in an industrial neighborhood in Lagos.
You can do it. Don't worry.
Sam Amedu founded it back in the 1990s.
I know you are thinking that a lot of the players will laugh at you. The point is that every player that becomes great starts somewhere. Let's go.
Academy is a fancy word for it. It's just a bathroomless bunkhouse and this outdoor court. It's all free, all volunteer. Kids show up at 7 in the morning before the day gets too hot. Amedu buys them all breakfast and dishes out advice.
Lady, what position do you think you will end up playing?
I'll end up playing as a 3 and 4.
Why do you think you have the ability to end up as a 4?
I have the ability to end up as a 4 because of my height and the inside play.
Olaide Jubril is 16 years old and already 6 feet 8 inches tall. A prep school in Boston just offered him a scholarship. He sees himself playing as a big man, a forward. Amedu tells him he should work on his ball handling so he can also play guard.
You will be sure that you will make any team. But if you are 6'8 and you want to play as a 4, you may have all the skills, but the likelihood is that you may be limited when you come against them big guys. So start thinking about it. Huh?
None of Amedu's protégés have made it to the Grizzlies yet. One kid from his academy was drafted by the Seattle Supersonics and banged around the league for a couple of years. Others are playing in Europe and Asia, but more than 30 players he's worked with have gone on to high school or college in the States.
If you want to talk about the number of kids that we have reformed, let me put it that way. It is amazing. We have taken people that have lost hope in life, drug addicts, we have brought them to the basketball court. They are now looking after themselves and their own family. They may not play in the NBA, but they have been able to use basketball to get education in life, which is the most important thing.
One result of the NBA's global push is that kids all over the world now go to bed each night and dream that they can make it. But the competition is beyond intense. There's a tiny number of openings, and of course, the bigger the applicant pool, the worse any single player's chances. Kids from Africa are at a disadvantage anyway. There's hardly enough money for backboards, let alone weights and videos and special diets. Sam Amedu understands all that, but he says he doesn't mind. It's better than they're not dreaming at all.
John Miller went to Nigeria to get that story for us. It's a collaboration with Homelands Productions. John sent us a note to tell us that Olaide Jubril never did make it to the United States. The 16-year-old who was offered a scholarship in Boston couldn't get a visa. You can see pictures of him and of Sam Amedu, and you can hear other stories from our series Working at our website. It's marketplace.org.
Marketplace is supported by the American Academy of Family Physicians, personal preventive care for better patient health, and reduced costs for business, aafp.org/value. And by Putnam Investments, where a diversified mix of international investments can strengthen your portfolio. Putnam Investments, a prudent approach to investing. Additional support from the University of Southern California's Annenberg School for Communication.
This final note with a Zen-like behavioral economics bent. For those of you who can't seem to save enough for rainy days, here's an explosive concept. The Japanese toy company Tommy has created what it calls the savings bomb, a piggy bank designed to blow up if you don't put money in it regularly. Or, to be clear, its door, which has a skull and crossbones on it, opens up and spills coins everywhere. According to a company spokesman, this action will force people to pick up the change and reflect on their laziness. It goes on sale in Japan next week. And that is Marketplace from American Public Media. Today, the Dow dropped 33 points, a quarter of 1% after Chairman Bernanke's testimony on the Hill. The Nasdaq lost 52 points, 1.9%. The S&P 500 closed basically flat. Our editors include Kevin Arnovitz, Patty Hirsch, Margaret Koval, Karen Lowe, Betsy Streisand, and Lisa Tucker. Our managing editor is George Judson. Starting tomorrow on the program, a week-long look at the American consumer economy.
I turn to my kids every so often, and I ask them, How many more pairs of jeans do they need? How many more handbags can they buy? And how much more room do they have in their closet?
Consumer spending fuels this economy, but how long can it keep going on? I'm Kai Rizdahl. Please join us tomorrow for Consumed.
American Public Media.